down. Buzzer beater, do it all now. All now. Top corner talking home run. Touchdown. Buzzer beater, do it all now. All now. Top corner like.
All right. Hello, ladies and gentlemen. It is Monday, June 2nd, 2025, and this is the Monday Report. I'm your host, H. James K., and today we're going to be changing plans because originally I promised I was going to do a retrospective on the Indy 500 and its history and cultural impact, but I want to dedicate more time to that, so that's going to be pushed to July so I can work on that some more. In the meantime, we're going to do a recap of yesterday's Spanish Grand Prix and Chevrolet Detroit Grand Prix, that being Formula One and IndyCar respectively, because boy, oh boy, did things happen in those races. All right, let's get to it. Jumping right in with the Spanish Grand Prix, the McLarens won easily, finishing first and second. Behind them, the final seven laps of the race were a maelstrom of crazy moments. So that was the craziest finish I've seen to a race that had no, that where there was no doubt over who was going to win. It was weird. So we'll just go through this sequence of events, and then I'll give my thoughts. First, Red Bull put Max Verstappen on hard tires to finish the race, which was a brain-dead decision. They quickly surmised that a three-stop race was going to be the best thing for Max to do with the tire deg that his car had during the race. Well, they put him on hard tires to finish when everyone else around him was on softs. And boy, oh boy, that was one of the decisions of all time. Let's just say that. That was not smart. So right off the gate, Max is in a hole. He's got a grip disadvantage. Performance is just, it ain't gonna be good. Then Max botches the restart. So there was a safety car, and with about seven laps to go in the race, the safety car was ending and they were gonna restart the race. Max botched the restart, allowing Charles Leclerc to get a run on him going into turn one of Circuit Barcelona Catalunya, or whatever it's called. Meanwhile, it goes without saying, the McLarens are gone. They have just taken off into the distance and they're just bye-bye. So, in a battle for third, Leclerc gets alongside Max, waiting until after the start-finish line on the restart, so he's not breaking the rules. He then bumps Max in the middle of the front stretch, and then passes Max into turn one, just going away. And it's not a big bump, it's not a small bump, and it starts a cascade of events. George Russell of Mercedes follows Leclerc and bumps Max in turn one as well, forcing Max to cut the corner and prevent a further collision. Max is furious, first about Leclerc bumping into him, and then George Russell just hip-checking him off the track. In the moment, both looked like very minor hits. A couple of turns later, Red Bull tell Max to give the position to George. It goes without saying that Leclerc beat Max through the turn, and he takes off, and he's in third. Well, Max Verstappen, after cutting the corner, stayed in fourth place, so Red Bull orders Max Verstappen to give fourth place to George Russell. Max is furious. Absolutely furious. If he was allowed to swear on the radio, he would have been swearing his ass off. That's what we're talking about here. So the broadcast booth is perplexed by this entire sequence of events. They're just going on and on and on about all the crazy things that are happening and the mistakes, and you can't bump this person, you can't do this. And then Max drops the big one. He slows down in the middle of a turn, pulls off to the left to let George Russell by, and as George Russell drives by him, he intentionally steered to the right and bumped into George Russell. And it was intentional. There was no doubt about it. He swerved right into him. Bang! The two cars hit. Crofty and Nico Rosberg were stunned by this. Stunned. Absolutely floored that Max Verstappen, one of the best drivers in the world, would make such a crazy decision. And Immediately in the moment, Max Verstappen is given a 10-second penalty, which drops his finish from 5th all the way down to 10th. But after the race, there is more discussion, and we're still waiting. As of the evening on Sunday, we're still waiting to see when or if any further penalties happen. Even still, the loss of the points he would have gained from a 5th-place finish compared to finishing in 10th cannot be understated, especially when he's the only driver who's even remotely capable of catching the McLarens on a week-by-week basis. Alright, so that's the sequence of events. Now my thoughts on the whole thing. I think Max Verstappen should be given a race ban for Canada, the next race on the 15th of June. Yes, I know that sounds extreme. I think he should be banned from the next race. And I think part of it is a pattern of behavior with Max Verstappen. Max Verstappen, much like Michael Schumacher, is one of these drivers who thinks either you're going to let me through or we're both going to crash and there's nothing you can do about it. Now, there's nothing wrong with that kind of perspective. Senna had a very similar perspective, but it isn't super in the spirit of the regulations when you drive up to somebody, hip check them out of the way, and then drive by and get no penalty, which has happened to Max Verstappen multiple times, over and over and over. It has happened several times. And I think a message needs to be sent to Max Verstappen that you can't just do whatever the hell you want on track. Because as we've seen with Max, he bumps and bams and he's physical at the line with everybody like he's a freaking football player. And then he bitches and cries on the radio whenever anyone even breathes in his direction. Going, "Mommy, mommy, that guy bumped into me just the slightest bit with a feather on my tire." He bitches and moans about every hit. The Leclerc hit on the restart was nothing. It was nothing. A tiddler, as the British would say. It was nothing. Total race incident. And the stewards agreed with me on that one because they did no further actions. Meanwhile, yes, George Russell totally hip-checked him out of the way, and he shouldn't have had to give fifth to George Russell. George probably should have gotten a penalty for that. But that doesn't give Max Verstappen carte blanche to hip-check and ram into people. You can't do it. Sebastian Vettel did something similar to that on a caution lap, and he got 3 penalty points. Max Verstappen must be penalized for that infraction. He has to. It's important that he understand that you cannot just ram into people on purpose. You bump in the middle of a turn one final position? That's fine. That's a racing incident. If you're intentionally steering into another driver to make contact with their car, that is a violation and it must be punished as such. Now, it probably goes without saying, I do not like Max Verstappen. He has a nasty habit of running everyone else off the road and then bitching and moaning about it when anyone else does it to him. Which, to me, makes him a freaking hypocrite. And this latest infraction is something you would do in iRacing or Assetto Corsa or any other simulated racing game. You would never do it on track. Senna would never do that. Prost, Schumacher, they would never take extracurricular damage. You just won't do it. That's not how the game is played. And it is up to Max to understand that you cannot act like a damn child. You can't cry to your mommy every time someone does something you do to everyone else. If you can't take the heat, get out of the oven. Well, you shouldn't be in the oven to begin with. Get out of the heat. If you can't take the heat, get out of the kitchen. That's the saying. Either way, I detest Max Verstappen. He's a hypocrite. He's a baby who bitches and moans about everything. And I'm hoping Formula One gives him a bigger penalty because he freaking deserves it for what he did. I could at least respect him as a quality driver. That makes me respect him a little less because that's something that a child does. Oh, you lost your temper, so you're going to like take your ball and go home. No, dude, you're in fucking Formula One. You were in the biggest, most affluent, most influential, most important, most popular motorsport in the world. The only things bigger than Formula One are the NFL and freaking soccer. That's how big of a deal this is. You're in one of the best seats in the entire series. Act like it. Don't act like a damn child in go-karts. Yeah. All right. Moving on from that crazy melee in Formula One, let's talk about the Chevrolet Detroit Grand Prix held in downtown Detroit in front of the Renaissance Center. Boy, oh boy, does it feel good to have a good race in the IndyCar. Oh my god, after last week's disappointing Indy 500 and the freaking five other boring races we've had before then. Oh, it was so good to have a good race. Man, Detroit was good. And Detroit's not a great track, but oh my god. I heard someone call it the Ghetto Monaco Grand Prix, and that's apropos. It's tight like Monaco. It's hard to pass, but man, there are moments when you can really get your arms out and you can stab a mother licker, if you know what I mean. Man, those guys were fighting it out on track, and it was great to see. So starting from, I've got 10 headlines that we're going to dive into each and every one of them. First of all, Kyle Kirkwood was fast from the jump. That man got off the trailer and he was fast. He was the fastest qualifier and he won the damn race. And he won it handily. And you know what? More power to you. Best driver on the track. And this is after the crazy moment in practice when Will Power used the chrome horn and literally pushed Kyle Kirkwood's car through two turns during practice. Now, that's fine in practice, but thankfully no one did anything that stupid in the race. But either way, Kyle Kirkwood was the fastest driver on track all weekend, and he deserved to win, and I'm happy for him. Because, truthfully, it helped with the championship, because Palou only leads by 78 now. He doesn't lead by 112 points. Alright, second headline, Santino's insane drive from 21st to 2nd. Santino Ferrucci driving the AJ Foyt-owned Sexton Properties Chevrolet finished second, his best career finish, and he even led laps. It was amazing to see. He was so fast, and he was just hanging on for dear life, playing defense against Colton Herta and Will Power, and dodging bullet after bullet after bullet. It was awesome. It was an absolutely incredible effort from him, and the late red flag to repair track damage, which we're going to talk about that a little later, totally saved his race because he was having trouble with the balance of his car and keeping his tires under him. But oh my, what a spirited drive all the way from 21st on a track where it's not known for its passing. That was incredible. Next, Colton Herta. He survived his pit crew and took third place at the finish. Man, the first race where the Andretti team didn't give him a bad pit stop, he got a podium. Imagine that. Colton Herta is one of the three fastest drivers on the circuit, right up there with Kyle Kirkwood and Alex Palou. And if it wasn't for his damn pit crew, he might be leading the championship right now. Who knows? Because every week before this one, there had been some kind of pit mistake that he just couldn't overcome, because who expects to have to overcome a glaring issue that's not your fault every single race? So, Colton Herta, he drove like a man with his hair on fire. He made some insane defensive moves and offensive moves against Will Power late in the race and finished third in an all-American podium. 4. Alex Palou continues the tradition of the post-Indy 500 hangover. For those who don't know, the last person to win the Indy 500 and then win the race following directly after it was Juan Pablo Montoya all the way back in CART in 2000 when he won at Milwaukee at the Miller American 200, as I think it was called back in 2000. Since then, no one else has won the race after Indy. It hasn't happened. And that's because not only are you expected to do like 10 hours of media and press after you win the race on Sunday of Memorial Day weekend, you're flown all over the country on an extended tour. Like, Alex Palou was at the Pacers game in Indianapolis that night. Then the next morning, he was on First Things First in New York, and then he was at the Yankees game, and then he was at this and that and this press junket and that thing and this thing. So obviously getting to Detroit after a week of jet-setting all over the country and doing press appearances and all that, he's a little tired, and it showed because his car was fast, but he wasn't quick, if that makes any sense. Regardless of his pace or lack thereof in qualifying and practice, he was there down the stretch. He was in the hunt until David Malukas totally punted the crap out of him into the wall late in the race, forcing him to crash into the barriers and ending his race right then and there. David Malukas got a drive-through penalty, understandably, for avoidable contact, and Alex Palou's day was done. Now, this obviously provided an opportunity for the rest of the field to close the gap between them and Alex Palou. And multiple drivers did. Christian Lundgaard did it. Pato O'Ward did it. And especially Kyle Kirkwood, who's now only 78 points behind Alex Palou. And yes, 78 points is an absolutely enormous deficit to have to make up. But there's a lot of races left, and it's totally possible. Championship is back on. Mr. Inevitable is still probably inevitable, but he's slightly less inevitable than he was on Saturday, if that makes any sense. All right, moving on. Recovery drive for Pato. So Pato O'Ward was okay fast in practice and then just botched his qualifying. He just didn't qualify well and started the race in 18th. And McLaren had a wonderful strategy call where they decided from the jump, we're doing a three-stop strategy. We're going to go hard, hard, soft, hard. That's going to be the tire strategy to get us to the front. And it totally worked. He went from the back to the front in two pit sequences. Now, he led three laps, but that was only because of they were in the middle of a transitional kind of pit sequence where the orders jumbled up. But it didn't get him close enough to contend for the win, but it was close enough where he wasn't marooned in the back with pay drivers and stuff. So it was a great drive from Pato O'Ward, and honestly, this is the most mature season Pato has ever done. It isn't as flashy, and he hasn't won anything, and it's not as like, wow, this kid is so fast. But at the same time, it's more reserved, more composed, more consistent. He's third in the championship. He was second in the championship on Saturday before the race, and now he's third. It's been an impressive run of form for Pato O'Ward, in my honest opinion. All right, next, top 10 for Rossi. To be honest with you, I have no idea how this happened. I just noticed at the end of the race that Rossi was in 10th. Good for you, dude. I don't know what tires he had to save or what, but it was impressive. The next thing we got to talk about, though, is not as fun, not as positive. So there was an absolutely crazy crash down towards the end of the race going into turn 3. So for those who don't know, the Detroit street circuit is basically, if you looked at a deep pan from the side, there's kind of a circular bit, and then there's a long straightaway. And the long straightaway, which goes down Jefferson Avenue in downtown Detroit, is the backstretch from turns 2 to turn 3. And that's where all the passing happens. But it's a main artery of downtown Detroit's road system, so it's very, very, very bumpy. Especially in the turn where they have to go into the hairpin for turn 3 to go to the rest of the track. And late in the race, Rahal Letterman-Lanigan driver Louis Foster, who's a rookie, had a catastrophic failure of his suspension. I don't know if the steering arms themselves, if the suspension arms broke off the car or if they broke off the hub, but either way, his right front suspension totally disintegrated, which obviously rendered him incapable of steering his car. So he's going 180 miles an hour, full beans down into this corner, and because he can't stop and he can't steer and he's out of control, he collects Felix Rosenqvist. Felix Rosenqvist, unlucky for him, goes careening into a tire barrier on this very corner where the way that turn works, there's a long runoff straight off the turn, but the entrance to the turn, there's kind of this 90-degree wall on like the one side of the runoff, and then on the basically on the side of the track going down to the left towards the rest of the track. And Felix Rosenquist's car was spun and pushed right into that corner. Now, thankfully, there was a ton of tire barrier there, but all the same, he was complaining of a bad feeling in his leg. It was a really hard shunt, and he went to the infield care center on a gurney. Now, he was sitting upright, but still, it is notable. Now, Foster was a little more lucky. His car was KO'd, totally destroyed, but he went screaming down the runoff into the tire barrier down there, and he was, okay, seen and released from the infield care center, whereas Rosenquist, Rosie, as a lot of them call him these days, was sent to the hospital downtown to finish off his evaluation because he was a little shaken up from that crash. It was gnarly. I've never seen anything like that, where the suspension just buckled for no reason at all. It wasn't like he hit a wall or he got hit by somebody. It just pop, and it was gone. So, don't know what that's about, but it was a crazy shunt, and it caused the red flag that ultimately allowed the field to bunch up and allowed Santino Ferrucci to stay on top of his tires, and it was a crazy turn of events. Now, Louis Foster wasn't the only Ray Hall driver to have issues. In fact, every Ray Hall driver had issues this week. So Devlin DeFrancesco, his team just didn't get one of the lugs, like the bolt on his tire on. And his tire fell off on the track. So he was out. Catastrophic mistake. Don't even know how that happens. Then, seemingly out of nowhere, Graham Rahal had a mechanical failure and lost two laps. Then you pile this on top of the fact that Louis Foster just destroyed his car. It was not a good week for a team that has had a long stretch of bad form as of late. The next thing we got to talk about is Team Penske. Goodness gracious me, the run of bad form from Team Penske continues. This is the worst season Penske's had in years. None of their drivers is higher than like 7th in points right now. It's absolutely insane. It's the worst I've seen Penske in, gosh, probably since I've been watching IndyCar racing, which goes back to like 2007 when I started going to the 500. It's crazy. It's stunning. And this is in spite of the fact that Power had like a 4th place finish on Sunday. It was a good drive from him, but Newgarden had issues again, and Scott McLaughlin was nowhere. And this is on top of all the issues that they had at Indianapolis the first time at the road course and the second time on the speedway, and the lack of performance they had in the 5 races before that, or the 4 races before the month of May. It's been surprising to say the least. And now with the loss of Ben Bretzman and Tim Sindrick and Ron Rozewski, who all got fired after Indy 500, I don't know what Penske's going to do, because they're in trouble. Now, will they suddenly become a backmarker like Junkos or Dale Coyne? No. But will they contend for a championship? Not even a little bit. Do they win a race? Maybe. But I don't know where. Between Kirkwood and Lundgaard and Pato and Palou, especially Palou. Good Lord. And Colton Herta on a miraculous day. I don't know where Penske's going to get through. Maybe Nashville. Maybe Road America. Maybe Portland or Laguna Seca. I don't know. But I just have this weird feeling that they're just, maybe they don't win a race this year for the first time in who knows how long. It's been startling. And I think Roger Penske's going to have to make some serious changes to the team that I know he doesn't have a lot of control over these days, but still, it's bad. It is bad for Penske right now, and who knows when that's going to turn around after all the chaos they've seen so far. Finally, let's just talk about the race in general. This was the best race of the season so far. I've mentioned that before, but I'll say it again. This was the best IndyCar race of 2025. Yes, finally, we had contention for the lead, cautions, multiple strategies, passing on track, bumping and bamming, and good physical, hard racing. Oh my God, finally. It feels like it's been 1,000 years, especially after we were robbed of that great finish at Indianapolis last week. Oh my God, it was amazing. It was such a good race. And it came from... And it came from the Detroit track, of all places. It's one of those things where I wouldn't have predicted that if you paid me to make a prediction. Like, that's crazy. Because Detroit was awful the last 2 years. But it put on an absolute banger of a race. Banger! In 2025, which is great. The next race up for the NTT IndyCar Series is the Bomarito Automotive Group 500 at Worldwide Technology Raceway, otherwise known as Gateway Motorsports Park. Great little oval. I've been there. It's interesting because one end of the track is higher banking in the turns than the other, which makes for very interesting setups. Do you set up for the lower banking or the higher banking? You know, it's got long straights. It's going to be, and it's at night on Sunday. Sunday, June 15th at 8:20 is when it starts. So check into that. But, yeah, that's the next race up for IndyCar. The next race for Formula One is the same day, actually, June 15th at 2 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. And, boy, we'll see what Max Verstappen does, and Lando, and Oscar, and George, and Charles Leclerc, and Lewis Hamilton, and all of the other ones. All the other usual suspects. But it's going to be interesting. We have some time to kind of digest this racing before we have to jump right back in on the 15th, which is going to be nuts. So I think I'm going to wrap up this episode right there. So next week, I'm going to be doing a full preview of the 24 Hours of Le Mans, where I'm going to give you predictions and previews for each category. That'll be a fun one, because I love watching Milan. I love, like, saying, all right, good night, see you later, and then just staying up the rest of the night and watching the cars drive around in the dark. I love Le Mans. It's so cool. So that's going to be next week. For those of you listening on Apple Podcasts and Spotify and Amazon Music and Audible.com and RSS.com and wherever else you are listening to podcasts, wherever else they're aggregated, thank you, thank you, thank you. It's hard to find my podcast, and I appreciate those of you listening. Spread the word. Help other people discover this podcast so we can keep on growing. For those of you listening on YouTube, like, comment, subscribe, hit the bell icon to get notifications. Do all the things to help the channel grow. Feed that algorithm so we can keep on growing and reaching more people and do more cool things. Thank you, thank you, thank you, and thank you. All right, my name is H. James K., thank y'all for tuning in. Until next time.